This episode of Beer and Bullshit is brought to you by Longhorn Lager from Farmers Creed Beer.
I mean, we did what we could.
It's time to grab the bull by the horns.
But I don't think it's accounted for.
This is all part of the intro.
Oh, yeah. Hey, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. We're just discussing our numbers. We're going to edit those out and inflate them.
We'll find a way to get into the show.
Boy, and half a billion.
I can't believe that most of the Earth listens to our show.
I mean, that math isn't perfect, but half certainly most of North America.
It's Beer and Bullshit podcast with Chris Pellerin and Ben Johnson. We are coming to you live from my living room. And the couch is in a different position than the last time we did it. I hope they didn't throw you. I'm on Chris's right. That's weird for us.
It's all thrown me.
Mm-hmm. It's all thrown me.
I feel like a ball just chucked in the dirt, warming up.
We have been, we missed a week just because we wanted to take one off. You know what? There was no reason for us to not be on last week other than the fact that we just didn't fucking feel like it. And you're going to have to deal with it. We did start our slow pitch season. You haven't been to either game yet.
No, I played last night.
Did you play?
I did.
I heard we whooped ass 31-3.
It was a bit of a beatdown. I wasn't sure I was going to get the whole game in, but I had to take off early. But hit my grand slam in the last inning.
You hit a grand slam? Said
peace to the boys and got the hell out of there.
Inside the park. You didn't hit over the fence, right?
No, I had back-to-back inside the park homers, and my quads and hams are... They're telling me. They're barking at me.
For your first game of the season. Go long balls. If you want to watch the long balls, we play Wednesdays at Dorchester. Come on out. It's a family event. Fun for everybody. There's hot dogs. There's beer. It's a good time.
We're working on getting left field in there, trying to help our friends.
Yeah, Barry. We know that our friend Barry from left field dropped off some samples for Slow Pitch City in Dorchester. And so our team does our best to ask for left field. But guess what? They've got a relationship with Molson and Labatt, so it's tough going.
Yeah, I just walked through the bar area just saying, ice, cold.
You're doing it again.
I know, but I try to make it a little more, don't give them a little sexier.
We give so much free. Why you haven't mentioned Great Lakes Brewery, because you won't anymore, because there are sworn enemies.
I mean, the blood feud, probably. You're more of
blood feud.
You're
to the death.
You're more of the guy that would be interested in, like, you know, rat beef for no reason.
I'll sort never of style. Drink another Canuck.
I don't believe you.
No, I drank one last night. It's not that big of a... It's like a light... A blood light feud. Wait, that's a real beer. We got a good guest tonight. I felt, you know, a little underprepared tonight because there was a lot to talk about. It was a brewery that has a lot going on. They got a crazy sustainability initiative. They got crazy good beer. And I just, I feel like we just scratched the surface. But you know what? That's what we do here because we keep it to an hour. Because who wants to listen to a beer podcast for 4 fucking hours?
Well, and who wants to scratch underneath the surface?
The surface is great.
It's like the best place to scratch.
The surface of most things is the best part. You get below the surface, ugh, it's blood and cells. And
I don't have deep muscle itches.
Right. My lawn looks great. You get below the surface, ew, dirt, worms, gross stuff. Surface is where it's at. Keep it surface level for everything.
And this one is a little bit of a special one for those that grew up in the immediate vicinity of Ben and I.
Spoiler alert, but our guest tonight, who is the owner and founder of Bench Brewing, Matt Giffen, went to the same elementary school and high school as us. So yeah, pretty cool. We're gonna get into that.
We're gonna iron it out.
We are gonna iron it out. Should we talk about anything else or just get into the interview?
I think we can just get to her, bud. Anything else? Like, how's your couple weeks been?
Yeah, we'll just get to the interview then.
Yeah, let's get going.
Here's Matt. Matt, I think you're the first person that's been on the show, or the first brewer the brewery owner I've become aware of because of our mutual alumni status. I don't think you're on my radar before our high school's 100th anniversary party.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, small world. Same elementary and high school.
That's right. I'm guessing, I don't want to age you, I'm guessing we're a few years different. We're a few years apart.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm class of 85, back in the grade 13 days.
Okay, we were the second last grade 13 ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were the class of 2000. We called it OAC in our day, but we had it too.
There you go.
We got the benefit of being 19 in high school, like finished high school, legally going to the bar and seeing our teachers there. So
at the Wart on Wortley Road.
You got it.
You got it. You wrote it. Yeah.
It was funny in my normal life, Matt. I was out hosting some people at a London Knights game, and I started talking about this podcast. And I don't normally advertise too much within my professional life that I'm a beer podcast co-host, but people started asking me about it, and I was out with Chris Hamber. He's like, I went to school with Matt. Yeah, he was my quarterback, you know, and he's got a brewery bench. And then I talked to our booking agent who sitting beside me.
That's great. Yeah, small world. Yep. He's married to Heidi, a good friend and sister of a really good friend of mine from South as well. So very cool.
South Lions, Garnet and Gray.
Garnet Gray, knocking down lead the way.
So Matt, I've done a tiny bit of research before the show. You know, managed it between bedtime and burgers today. But the thing that seems to come up a lot with Bench is your dedication to sustainability first and foremost. I mean, I knew about you. I knew about the beer. I mean, I think Citra Grove was probably my first these guys are legit. I think I remember that beer being like, okay, these guys are worth it. Yep. I knew about your beer first, but then, you know, if you dig into you and your story, there's a lot of sustainability stuff going on there. And a lot of people maybe outside the brewing industry are picking up on that story.
Yeah, great. We're a rural brewery. So by definition, we had to really kind of focus on sustainability from the get-go. Where we're located on either side of us, there are families that have been there for over 220 years. So being a steward of the land and coming in and respecting the environment was pretty important. So one of the great benefits of starting a company from scratch is you have a clean slate and you can kind of create your core values. And sustainability was one of our initial core values from the very beginning. Basically sustainability for us means conserving the water that we use. We use a lot of water, as any brewery would, but we don't have the benefit of actually putting that water down the drain. So we had to come up with a solution out of the gate to kind of figure that out, and we did early. So what we do is we basically purify and treat all of our brewery effluent, and we reuse that for irrigation, and we repurpose the organics that we strip out during the purification process, and we use that for fertilizer. So, each year we're purifying between 8 and 9 million liters a year. We reuse that for irrigation. We've got our property, which we have 3 acres of hops. We've got 12 acres of apples adjacent to us. And then we're with two other neighbors. So we have about 175 acres with which to do the fertilizer and the irrigation. A lot of oversight from the Ministry of Agriculture. It's fairly well regulated, but it's just been spectacular. So we have a zero wastewater footprint. And then from there, we all kind of look at, and I saw your notes, and I don't want to bring COVID up too much, but when I talk about COVID, I talk about some of the COVID silver linings. And one of them was I found out about what a B Corp was. And B Corp, B stands for beneficial corporation. And it was one of our lenders at the time and said, all these things that you're doing, that you're focusing on, your community and the environment, sustainability and governance, have you thought about a B Corp or actually going for B Corp certification? I said, I don't even know what that is. Right. But I had a lot of time on my hands, starting in April of 2020. And I sat down and we did the work. It made sense. It took us about 10 months to go through the very rigorous certification process. And we became certified as a B Corp. And one of the things in that certification process was they said, oh, great, you're the wastewater. This is all a great story and what you're doing. With our sustainability framework, we're going to really test that. And I think they prevent greenwashing in so doing. But the thing that they did say was, what are your greenhouse gas emissions? And I said, I have no idea. Well, I said, oh, stop. If you don't know what that is, then, you know, you really can't become a B Corp certified company. So we asked them what to do. They had a company called Climate Smart at the time, which is now owned by Bank of Montreal, believe it or not. But they were a certified B Corp, and they are a company that then goes through and helps companies create a greenhouse gas emissions inventory. And so I called them up and said, you know, this is what we'd like to do. We'd like to understand what our greenhouse gases are. And they said, okay, are you really sure? And I said, yeah, why? This is a huge commitment. You know, you have to commit and you have to calculate, and then you have to communicate. So calculating was big. Like, it's all about the data. If we can't, you know, in fact, show exactly what our greenhouse gas emissions are, how can you then start to lower them? Mm-hmm. So that's been who we are from the very beginning. And all the folks that work with me, I bore them about this daily. So I'm probably boring you about it right now.
No, it's awesome. Okay, but so it started in 2018 with a mandate of being sustainable. You just described like a pretty ridiculously large and elaborate brewery from the get-go. I'm going to read between the lines here. Like, most breweries don't start like that. So you had to be coming from some, like, where did you come from? Most people are like, okay, I'm going to make some beer. And they're like, fuck, we're wasting a lot of water. How can we, like, you had some advantage there to be able to think about that from the get-go. I know you started with an awesome system with voters, and like, to be able to think about sustainability from day one. How did you wrap your brain around that? And like, I mean, I guess, where did the money come from, right? This is all the shit you just said is pretty expensive. Sorry to get into your bottom line right away, but that's where my head goes.
It was an investment. And, you know, we honestly did it for the right reasons. And actually, even when we were building the brewery, we built it so that we could actually do that water purification process. We knew we had no choice, but, you know, it was part of our core beliefs and what we wanted to do. Actually, my background, I'm what's called a recovering banker. So I was a banker for many, many years. But
I hope to be a recovering banker one day myself. Yeah. I'm still addicted right now.
He's a current banker. Yeah.
But, you know, we'd actually been growing some grapes in the area prior to opening the brewery and overlapping in that time that I was working downtown Toronto. So I really got an appreciation for the agricultural piece of it. And even in that 5 years prior to the brewery, while we were doing grapes, like, I noticed the difference in the requirement for irrigation. If you don't have irrigation now in the area that we're growing, and I'm saying that even within the last 10 years, you can't do it. And that is some climate change. So I saw that and realized that was pretty critical for us to address that. And as part of, you know, our building the business, just really minimizing our environmental footprint. But we did it and really didn't talk about it. And again, it was one of our financial partners that said, all of these things you're doing, why aren't you talking about it so that you can, you know, maybe kind of share your knowledge and maybe other breweries will do the same. And so that's why we've really kind of started leaning into just having open discussions about the sustainability piece of our business. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's beer first and foremost. That's been our passion. You know, I we were overseas for a bit of time and really got to like and understand the Belgian style, farmhouse style of brewing. And the place where we are in Lincoln is just perfect for that. You know, we've got the tender fruit all around us, orchards, grapes, obviously. We had to have 3 acres or 5 acres of hops just to be able to sell beer at our door back in the day.
Acres of hops to sell beer from your door?
It's a very interesting, like, as a vineyard, you have to have 5 acres of grapes in order to sell wine at your cellar door. Right.
Cider, you have to grow a certain amount.
And about cider.
Yeah.
So there was no precedence for beer for a brewery in rural Ontario. So they really kind of pigeonholed us in that same.
That's really weird. You could open a brewery in Pickering and not grow shit, and you could sell beer at the front door.
What's yeah, that's weird.
It was, but, you know, fortunately, I said, listen, I want to do hops anyway. We had the 12 acres of apples, and at the time I was growing grapes, so it was fine. They looked at the whole farm process. We only have 3 on site, but they looked full farm, so they gave us the tick for the 5. And we were able to do it. Yeah, it was kind of groundbreaking at the time. That was the very beginning of the amazing support we've had from the town of Lincoln, our local municipality, who have been supportive from the very get-go. So we got through it. It wasn't that hard of a zoning, rezoning. We're zoned agricultural. And it's because of the hops.
Hmm.
So the hops aren't easy.
Yeah, no. Did you say aren't they? Because like they grow like weeds. I grew them in my, I mean, they're not like brewing quality. But, like, I planted a rhizome 5 years ago. It's taken over my fucking backyard. So they're like, I would say maybe they're not easy to grow right, but they're hard to stop now.
Fair point. Yeah. What varietal do you have, by the way?
Cascade.
The Cascade, awesome.
Yeah.
They're tough to grow well and gain the quality and yield that you need for it to make sense. Right. And hops like a lot of water, but they don't like wet feet, so you have to have proper tile drains and they need attention. They organic hops for me is something that we could never do. And that's so, you know, there is a lot of disease pressure, very similar to some of the other, the grapes as an example, or tender fruit. So yeah, just all of that piece of it is something you have to be on top of all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the other question, you've said beer first, and your beer, you know, by all accounts is great, but you're a recovered banker. So you seem to have bought all the right elements. Like, I was reading about the system you launched with and your cellaring program, but like, where did you get the beer knowledge, or who did you bring in to help set up or guide your brewing?
Yeah, you know, I think that was pretty critical, is surrounding myself by people a lot smarter than me and a lot more experienced in making beer and quality beer and with the passion that goes along with it. Landed in a great place at the moment. We've had Caitlin Vandenbosch with us for almost 2 years. She former brewmaster at Mill Street.
Mm-hmm.
Was an OG at Mill Street prior to the ABI acquisition, so she's had that whole kind of gamut of craft and great pedigree from a brewing experience and education. Also, master distiller, cider maker, so it just made sense on a whole host of fronts. So we're in a really good position from that perspective. We're re-engaging on our funk side, getting back to the mixed fermentation. We're actually doing can conditioning now. We started on that funk side where we kind of bifurcate our brewery, that all the mixed fermentations on one side, clean breweries where we do most of our other beer, clean beer and all the brewing. And we always thought when we opened that we'd only bottle that beer, clearly worried about, you know, the re-fermentation risk. So only within the last, I'm going to say 6 to 9 months, have we really started can conditioning. So all the beer on that side now is canned. So we've, created a process, put an enzyme. There is some can conditioning, probably for 6 to 8 weeks after the beer is put in can, and it's just spectacular. So we're really getting into that now, just doing some serial innovation, one after another, small batch. Once it sells out, it sells out. Really only for sale at the hop shop that we call our retail space on site. Getting some interest from Quebec, believe it or not. I always thought that the Quebec palate would really appreciate that funk style of beer, and it's starting to come to fruition, which is kind of fun. Not in large volumes, but at some pretty cool funky bars in Montreal and parts of Quebec. So
interesting.
So do you benefit a lot, Matt, from being, I guess, the opposite side of the coin for a lot of the winery stuff that happens around you? Like, I've been to Bench a number of times when I'm going with my wife to Niagara on the Lake, or we're checking out a few wineries. I'm like, oh, we got to hit Bench, grab some beers. I can't drink wine all day.
I think so. It's just great to be a part of the community that we have. So yeah, I think being one of the only breweries in the area as people come through on wine tours and are good. But, you know, put the opposite side of the coin as well is that people come in, do you have wine to sell? And we'll say, no, we have beer, but maybe try this and try that. And usually we kind of convince folks to at least try. And the funk beer, the mixed fermentation beer is usually the ones that they choose, especially the ones with fruit. Our acquisition of Niagara Cider last year, I think, has been really fortuitous. I think people are really now looking at us as a cider destination, which has been great. It's a great compliment from a portfolio perspective to the beer that we brew. So yeah, I've always just loved being in this area. We fell in love with Niagara the first time we ever came. My wife and I were married actually in Niagara and Lake about 25 years ago. Love Niagara and Lake, but just feel a bit more comfortable in Lincoln. It's, you know, great people, topography, obviously the agriculture. It's just a great spot.
Yeah. And there's a certain, I don't know, like the terroir must be right for your open fermenting. Is that made up? Do you think, I mean, I think it's legit. There's so many, like, it's such an agricultural area that must do you some favors for your cool ship.
Absolutely. I've been to Cantillon and Brussels and tasted the beer there. And that's really where I got the jazz of that lambic style of brewing. And I like ours. Ours is a lot less acidic, and whether that's the airborne yeast that we're surrounded by, we've got, you know, vineyards on one side, obviously our hops, we've got orchards on the other. Does that translate into a more subtle airborne yeast during the inoculation process? I don't know, but it's pretty cool. I really like that terroir capacitor, terroir aspect to beer.
It's a nice story to tell when some guy wanders in because his wife is visiting breweries.
Exactly, it's true. And, you know, when during COVID, when we were doing all the contact tracing, we got to see who's coming in to see it. And it was 55% women that come in as our demographics. So, you know, we've got 1.4 million people that come by on King Street between May and October of every year. So it's really just a part of, you know, or it amounts to just, you know, bring people in and having them trial and taste the beer that we're brewing.
So the big question right now, we're seeing lots of like acquisitions and Franklin breweries closing, and not to get all doom and gloom, but like more than ever, I think there's a need to differentiate your place in the market. Like what makes you special? Cause there's a lot to choose from, at least, you know, a lot more than there were in 2012, for example. We're still behind the United States, but do you think, and this is where I get cynical, the B Corp stuff and the effort you put into sustainability, does that move the needle with consumers? This is always my question. Like, I think I asked the same thing of like Steam Whistle. I'm like, do consumers actually care about that? Like, obviously you're doing the right thing, but is that a message, like, not to be all marketing, but does that a message that resonates in your marketing, you think?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. Like we didn't do it for those reasons. And I think, you know, that's why it's taken us longer to kind of talk about it. We just recertified after 3 years, and we increased our scoring by about 16%. So for me, that's where I take pride in it, that, you know, we obviously had the sustainability piece, but where we improved was governance. So we did we did better with, you know, our employee handbook, better with the way, you know, we're enacting with other members of the community, you know, really focusing on local vendors, all that stuff. So for me, it helps us become a better company. We changed our articles of association to say that we're a company for good, for the stakeholders being, you know, the five impact areas that they call the environment, community, employees, and governance, obviously your customers. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's a good question. I never really did well in marketing, so I can't really say, but that's not the driving force for why we're saying it.
There's certainly breweries who have leaned into that, and good on them. But I've always wondered, like, I mean, I come from an industry where we put sustainability messaging on things and it doesn't move. Like no one cares. Like it's the right thing to do. But like maybe it's too cynical. People are like, I don't know, people don't read through it or don't want to like buy because of it. But in my experience, it doesn't sell more product. So you're doing it for the right reasons, I guess.
Yeah, my only real sounding board are my three daughters, and ranging in age from 17 to 22. And I asked, like, you know, if you had a choice, three products, you thought the liquid was all the same, you know, whatever that it was, craft beer, RTD, et cetera, you know, one was sustainable, one wasn't, and one you had absolutely no connection with from a value perspective. And they always point to the one that they share values with. And I really find this generation is so much better off than my generation anyway, in terms of their, you know, view of doing right by the environment and, you know, having such a low impact and, you know, making sure that that's a big thing in terms of their buying power. So That's my only sounding board, apart from, you know, some of the other folks that do work at bench. And you know, we do some employee, how would you say, census. You know, we'd like to find out how they're thinking from 6 months, every 6 months or from quarter to quarter. And there's a real passion for the sustainability piece of our business. So if anything, I think it's helping with employee retention because right. They believe in our mission.
Looking for a smooth, lightly filtered lager with a balanced taste and crisp finish? Grab the Bull by the Horns Loghorn Lager from Farmers Creed Beer is available at select beer and LCBO stores. Details at farmerscreedbeer.com.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not just about the sustainability. And I mean, you started there because you needed to from the water, but then embracing that. But the other parts of the ESG, right, where your governance and the way you want to run as a company and that culture all sort of stems from that. So it doesn't have to be about marketing, but if you've got the right values in one place, it's going to translate into other areas of your business. And I think to your point, the younger generation, they can sort of sniff through when it's writing checks for green credits rather than actually doing the work to make your company more sustainable right. and have better governance and more respect for people, diversity, that kind of thing. Where do you stand on diversity in the industry, Matt? Like, is that a focal point for Bench as well?
Yeah, you know, we're 66% women in terms of our workforce. Caitlin's brewing team is also just under 70% women. So it's important for us. You know, we want to hire the best people for our positions, and it just seems that that's the way it's turning out. Which, you know, I'm in a family of women, so that makes complete sense to me. I think we've always strived to have a workforce that resembles the demographic that's consuming our beer. I think that's important. So yeah, we'll always try and do that.
Have you found that? I mean, I would assume much of your business is tourism related. Like, again, I don't want to go down the COVID doom and gloom, but like let's say post pandemic, what's been your approach to like getting people back in, or maybe like recouping? Like, is there a different approach to how you present your beer, or I mean, you up your prices, do you offer it in a different, to position it differently? But what's been your like quote recovery strategy, if you've needed to have one?
You know, one of the other COVID silver linings is that we converted a big piece of our parking lot into an outdoor patio. So we really increased the capacity of you know, what we can offer both indoor and outdoor to folks coming in. Our traffic was certainly down last year from the record of 2022, but that was a big year for us. So I think it's really about getting people in, having that experience. We're pushing to what we call the whole campus feel now. We have 8 acres. We have an event space on our property as well, which is an old refurbished church. So it's getting people in, having festivals. We have our Hopstock Festival in July, which is pretty interesting. We've got 10 other Niagara breweries that are joining us, as well as Henderson from Toronto. So it's fun. It's our second annual, lots of bands, lots of fun. So it's really about just getting people in, having that experience, lots of tours, tasting the beer. The beauty of this tap room is that it's really a marketing source for us. So we try a lot of beer. Oh, that's really good. We'll do it again. Okay, keep going. We commercialize it. And that's why we've brought 2 beers in this year to the LCBO, switching out ones that we've had in the past, just based on trialing in our tap room and just seeing the success that we've had. So, you know, we just want to keep doing that innovation and experience at our place.
Nice. Hopstock, you said it's in July. Let's give it a little early. What are your dates? Let's plug it.
I think it's July 20th, I'm gonna say. So okay. It's pretty July 20th. Yeah, it's fun. And all the local breweries in with us, they were in last year as well. Lots of bands, lots of fun, great food. So it's a great time.
Nice. Well, what's been the biggest you're 6 years in. Probably doesn't feel like it, given that whole weird void of the last couple of years. But like, what has been? I mean, you seem pretty purpose driven. It seemed like you knew what you wanted to do when you started this company. But what's been the biggest surprise since you started to today, where you're like, didn't see that coming?
Oh man, I've I've learned a lot of lessons. There's no question. I try not to make the same mistakes twice. I think, you know, a lot of the ones that I've learned tend to be more on the, you know, inventory management, understanding LCBO, understanding retail, and just, you know, making sure that, you know, you're running a really tight, efficient business to go along, or at least in parallel with the passion that we have. So learned a lot. It's been interesting and fun, but, you know, with a lot of, you know, lessons learned, it kind of makes you a bigger and better company.
Where would you like to see the company go? I mean, you mentioned sort of like innovation, high level, you know, trying new things, but like, I mean, normally I would ask what's your like expansion plan, but you've got acres and you've got an old farmhouse and you've got an event space. I mean, like, you kind of have what a lot of little guys would aspire to. So like, what's your plan? I mean, is it like, you know, hopefully Molson comes calling and I'll move on to the next thing.
No, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I don't know. Just doing what we're doing better. The event space we opened, for the full year last year, we had 98 events there last year. We want to do that better. It's an important thing. We're hosting some really important personal events, weddings, wakes, you name it. We've had it there. It's a pretty special space. And like the schoolhouse that we have where our tap room is, that church has been there for many, many years and has a lot of experiences, and a lot of families really have emotional attachments to it. So yeah, I think just doing what we're doing better. I think that 2 years of COVID kind of took everybody kind of off their game. So it's now refining. It was that surviving, and what's the term, surviving, now thriving. Like we're just trying to kind of normalize and just be better. And if that takes us to a place where, you know, we continue to expand and grow, well, perfect. That's where I want to be. I think if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards, especially in the current market environment. It's tough, but I think there's opportunity as well.
And what about from a beer standpoint, Matt? What are you reaching for these days? What style beer are you drinking mostly? And then where do you see Bench going kind of in the future for, you know, next brews that you're excited to bring on?
Yeah. I think continuing to refine our core and make that better. So we brought in a pale ale. We had a pale ale 3 years ago. We brought another one in. It's more of an American style, just to kind of lend more diversity to our portfolio. We were kind of overweight IPAs, and I love IPAs. I think Caitlin and her team have really dialed in our Hazy IPA, Short Hills. It's just beauty, and especially the Balls Falls as well. So really kind of dialing in everything and getting it to where we want to be. Our lager is actually doing quite well. We've brought in a light lager. Again, that's, you know, a lot of folks in our tap room saying, you know, we want a lower ABV opportunity to drink. So we did that. Bringing in our cider all in house. We're tweaking that and having some fun with the cider. It's our apples after all, so that's kind of fun. But I think where we're leaning in on the innovation is twofold. We do have a little pilot system, and our brewing team has done a great job just kind of figuring out different styles of beer that they're passionate about, bringing it in, trialing it at in our tap room. We have two taps that are dedicated to pure innovation. But where we're leaning in now is on the funk side. We're almost like getting back to our roots. We started out as a real funk forward brewery, a farmhouse with all the barrels, the fooders that we have. That kind of went by the wayside. We were trying to keep the lights on, pay the bills during COVID, clean side, get that beer packaged and to retail. So we're having some fun in that perspective. With that, again, the can conditioning, cool ship. You can only really do it twice a year. We do it once a year for lack of a better, it's just more focused. I think we like to do it in that November period. So we have a lot of cool ship beer in barrels that we're going to start sprinkling. I call it sprinkling fairy dust into some of our new releases that we've got over the next about 6 months. And then we're going to have a cool ship release again at Christmas. And then we're going to start doing that every year. So that's kind of where I get jazzed. That's that real artisanal piece of brewing that kind of really got me into this place got me here in the first place.
You think people will lean back into that stuff? Like, everyone is trended to lagers and light lagers. I predicted we're just going to keep getting more traditional and go back to like, we're going to be a cask and English styles, but you think we're going to, you know, the pendulum's going to swing back and it's going to be the, you know, funk's coming back. Obviously you're betting on it.
Yeah, betting on it, but in a whole different way. Like when we started, it was build it and they will come, and they really didn't. So we really had to kind of tweak. Some did, like Citra Grove, and I appreciate, Ben, that you like that style. I love that beer, and I have so many folks that say, when is Citra Grove coming back? But I think now it's, you know, we're just going to really have some fun innovating. We're going to bring some, we have a Sumac Saison coming in as our next can release. And we're just going to really do that, but do it in a way that it's, you know, again, serial innovation releases. That, you know, when they're gone, they're gone, and we just continue. So it's going to still be a very small piece of our business, but a very important part of our DNA. Will people get back to sours? Like, as you said, the people that love sours love it, but does everyone? So I think it's always going to be somewhat of a kind of a piece of your portfolio, but never a major part, in my view.
Matt, I'm going to make you guys improvise for a second. My oldest is staying at his grandma's and is calling to say goodnight. I'm going to take the call. You guys have to kill five
Go
minutes.
Go for it. I'll be right back. That's great.
You know, family first, right, Matt? Family first.
You got it.
So Sumac, eh? Like, so that's, like, I see Sumac growing around Huron County up near where my cottage is, and it's, I looked at those as weeds, and the first sumac beers that came out, I'm like, people are making jam, like, and they're making sumac and beers. Like, I didn't think that. So what does it taste like? I've never had sumac before.
They were literally picking it at the side of the road. The brewers went out and they were picking this, and it looks like this, you know, maroon. It's like a garnet.
It's like a big purple bud. Yeah. Garnet. It's Will Garnet on the south end.
Yeah. Will Garnet on the south end. And yeah, it's got an interesting taste. Like, I'd like to think that the Saison yeast in this particular beer kind of runs the show with respect to the taste of this. But yeah, no, it's neat. It gives it a nice cool color, you know, very similar to the, you know, we'll call it garnet. And yeah, I think it's again, something that is really, like, talk about terroir. Like, they were literally picking the sumac about less than a kilometer from our property. So it was crazy.
Nice work. You did 4 minutes on sumac. I kind of heard some of
that. I mean, you're only gone for about 40 seconds.
We decided that sumac is the color of garnet.
Sumac is the color of garnet.
Yeah.
Is this where we pivot to fully talk about sports at our old high school now that you mentioned garnet?
Yeah.
If there was a problem with Sam, then I would have been fine to just go ahead and just dive into banking. Okay. So it was a good thing that you came back.
Yeah, I was about to ask you.
Matt, is Matt the guy that made a considerable donation to our athletics at South? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Again.
Like, it seems like it's a long time ago, 20 years ago.
Okay, was that a long ago? Because I remember a story where someone demanded that it couldn't be spent on football, but you played football at South.
Yeah.
No, I think
we're mixing up my donors.
What Ben's referencing, so I work with David Miller. He works at the bank where I am as well. And the night we were talking about the show with Chris, David said, yeah, you know, I mean, Matt wound up having to go into a lawsuit because he wasn't happy with the work that was done, and there was rules against how much you could donate. And my son goes on as the co-plaintiff, so because he needed somebody else. And I'm talking to my son, who's 20 years old. I'm like, are you sure you want to do this? You want to get involved in this lawsuit? It's like, Matt says it's cool. It's fine.
Well, this is a lawsuit.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it was the field is, I had named after my dad. My dad, it was a lawyer as well. My dad grew up in that house at the top of Upper Queens and Commissioners. At White House, so he could walk to Mountsfield. Mountsfield kid, went to South, played for Ernie McTavish back in the day.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, you know, my wife Erin and I were looking for something to donate in his memory. And the Roar for the Floor, I think that was one of the fundraising aspects that they had back in the 75th to raise money for the floor, and it just made sense for the field. So. It all kind of worked out. It's a great field. Had a lot of great memories there, and it just made sense, and it worked out. Was it built as well as it should have been? I'm not sure. But, you know, my dad was a lawyer, so there's not a piece of litigation that he didn't dislike. So anyway, we got there in the end. It's a beautiful field, and everybody's happy.
You know, it was right around the time when South really kind of exploded onto the football scene. Like,
yeah.
A couple of good junior teams. I played volleyball through school, but I played in my last year, and it was the city finals there. And then after we graduated, there was multiple championships.
Yep.
All on that beautiful.
It's because of the grass. Field. It was because of the grass. Yeah. Speaking of grass and lasting sports legacies, do you know our the closest we have to a legacy of sports at South?
No, please tell me.
So it all goes back to grade 10.
Yeah.
The junior team. I was the manager. I didn't make the team, but all my friends made the team. So I was the manager, which is really a glorified water boy and stats keeper. But I got to go on the road with the team. So there was a storied tournament where everyone partied. We knew that everyone partied when they went to Sarnia. So when we went to Sarnia for the tournament, we took a ton of weed with us. And it was like, this is the weekend. So the day before the first game, we just hotboxed the shit out of our bathroom. Like, it was ridiculous. We couldn't see each other 3 feet apart. So the manager and the starting lineup just baked out of our heads in the room next to our coach. And so,
oh, wow.
Kind of good decisions you make as, for
sure. So our coach pounds on the door a few minutes after we all stumble out and comes in, and we're all literally eating candy, watching cartoons. And he just starts yelling like, "Who's smoking dope? The whole hotel smells." Anyway, cut to the entire team got suspended. So literally everyone, even guys that didn't make the trip, got suspended. And we were in the local paper. Jenny Jones is from London, Ontario, and wanted to have us on her show. So we were all off school for a week. In the papers as this, you know, stoner basketball team comes back, wins the city championship. So that was the legacy.
There you go. All right. Well, that ended well.
Yes. That's our story.
Really quite famous. They're going to make a movie about it.
It would make a good movie. I think it would be a pretty good film. Maybe a 30 for 30.
30 for 30 for sure.
Okay, we're completely off topic now. Okay, so I don't know if you've listened to the show before, but let's keep going off topic. Do you have a Pels Corner ready?
I do, and it's what you said, we were getting too far off topic with the South Mountsfield stuff. Well, Pels Corner is going to steer right back into that topic.
Oh, that's right.
We're going to do a little bit of Mountsfield South trivia.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Pels Corner is where we throw it over to Chris to do whatever he wants. And unfortunately, it seems like it's high school and elementary school trivia for you tonight.
Well, you'll find our listenership is it's mainly craft beer industry people from Ontario, but there's also a strong segment of people from, you know, from our neck of the woods. So
people, I would say, awesome. People working in craft beer with a sliver of South alumni.
Awesome.
Are you ready? First of all,
yeah. Any Ticat fans? We got our new Ticat beer as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I lived in Hamilton for 5 years. I love the Ticats. Danny McManus.
I'm gonna have to.
Ticat legend.
Take your word for
that. Big time.
Don't ask me about current players on the roster. I'm not that huge of a fan. I don't live in Hamilton anymore.
It's like saying Pinball Clemens.
All right, we're gonna start with this one here because I just received it this week. The South Collegiate Alumni Association is one of the only of its kind in Canada that has its own quarterly newsletter. True or false?
I think I got that yesterday. True.
Ben?
I don't get it. I've never received one piece of email from the South, despite being the fucking president of Students' Council.
Well, you know, it's pretty easy to subscribe.
I'll say false, given that you both are going true.
It was false, actually. It's biannual, Matt. Quarterly would be a little much.
Oh, my God. They got a small...
our listeners got love this. And
they love high school-related trivia that pivots on semantics.
It's meaningful for everyone. It's a true and false question. I had to make it a little tricky. What year was South established? Whoever's closer gets the point for this one. Ben, why don't you answer first?
1921.
Matt?
1923.
I guess we'll call it a tie. It was 22. Really good, fellas.
No, well, we just had the 100 year. I was trying to remember when it was.
Yeah, the 100 was last year.
Yeah.
The 100 was last year, but there was some reason why people said, well, shouldn't it have been 1924, but it wasn't. So I thought it was 1 year, but it was 2 years left.
The first year they didn't let women go. No, I don't know. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Maybe they shed it a couple of years. I'm not sure.
Yeah. There was the asbestos scare. You shut her down.
All right. Here's one to test your knowledge of the changing demographic of Old South in London.
Mm.
How many students would you guess attend South presently?
That's a good one.
Okay. So when we were there, probably about 800. So I'm going to say 1,000.
It's good math. I think we were about 900, and I was going to... I'll say 1,200 just for the sake of saying a number.
So it actually, at one point, shortly after we graduated, it was all baby boomers whose kids had grown up in Old South, and the population in the school dropped below 600, became a AA school for a little while. And they talked about closing it, and then it made its way back. Now it is up to 830.
It's only 830.
Okay.
Point for Matt, which I think is right around where it was when we were, Ben, despite...
How's your football program, though, bro?
Football program's doing well. I was trying to do some research on that today, but it's not very well maintained on the athletics website.
You got to read Morris De La Costa in the London Free Press. Is he still?
You're dating yourself. I love Morris.
Every time I scored over 10 points, Morris was there.
Oh yeah.
Shifting to our elementary school alma mater.
This is so niche. Like, who's listening to that? Dan Lorimer's loving this.
What year was Mountsfield established?
Ooh. It was on a field on a mountain.
I'm going to say 1930.
22.
It's 1940.
Wow. Okay.
Going to our guest there. Wow. And Ben was just referencing the Mountsfield song, which has
probably
interestingly made it into our show multiple times, but that was just our music teacher.
We all had to learn the same song. It's for generations. We played it on the recorder. Probably
Mountsfield Mustangs, yeah.
Probably after you, we learned the song, yeah.
Yeah, just one insane music teacher who wanted to put that together.
Shout out to Mr. Hines.
Where does Mountsfield derive its name from? Ben, why don't you come up with your guess on this one?
If I'm not mistaken, it was actually a collaboration between Philip Mounts and Ebbett Field. And no, I have no idea. I have no idea.
It's a good guess. I was going to say there's going to be a point for creativity if you don't know
it. Ebbett Field.
Yeah. Is that the field just as you go up Upper Queens? But not really sure.
It owes its name to the benefactor who donated the land for the construction of the school, was named after his ancestral property in England.
Wow, you did your homework tonight.
Okay. Wow.
Well, I'm glad there was a little information on the school's website.
Big time.
Adolf Mountsfield, a war criminal. No.
Last question. This one's even more niche. And this goes back to South.
This is the last one?
Yes.
Okay, good.
In 1999, at the Red Feather Dance, what was the song playing when I asked my now wife to be my girlfriend? We were dancing. It was a slow dance, Matt, if that helps you a little bit.
Stairway to Heaven?
Ooh,
great guess. Great guess.
I'm going to go with, I don't remember the words. I don't remember the title, but I know the song. It's like, step back dancing kind of slow.
That is too close. Is that the R&B band Next? I said it was a slow jam, Ben. You missed that prompt.
You wouldn't consider Too Close a slow jam?
No, it's a club banger.
Okay.
The answer is I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly.
Mm.
We replaced that with a different song at our wedding for obvious reasons.
It's a hot jam.
And I think we can close up Pell's Corner if anyone is still listening to that. It was Matt. Matt won.
Oh, congratulations, Matt.
You were closer on all of the jelly beans in the jar type guesses that I made you.
Well, Matt, thanks for participating in Pell's Corner and thanks for being on the show.
Hey, my pleasure. Great to talk to you guys for sure.
Maybe we'll catch you at, I'm going to say it wrong. I was going to say Hopstock.
Hopstock.
Okay, it's Hopstock.
Oh, I love that. That'd be great.
All right. Well, thanks. We'll talk soon.
A pleasure meeting you.
Hey, pleasure meeting you as well. All right, see you guys.
What'll it be?
A longhorn.
Longhorn lager?
Do I look like a sarsaparilla man to you?
One longhorn coming up.
Longhorn Lager by Farmers Creed Beer. Grab the bull by the horns at select beer and LCBO stores.
I used to think that I could not go on. And life was nothing but an awful song. But now I know the meaning of true love. I'm leaning on the everlasting arms. If I can see it, then I can do it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar.
Ba 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 ba.